The Theravada, which is a school which follows these particular suttas, usually has a rather problematic relationship with the world of nature and natural beauty. They have forgotten their own texts and the testimony of the early monks in a text which I really come to love called the Theragata. The Therigata, which is the songs of the nuns, is quite well known because it's, you know, a unique document, being just about the only religious poetry or religious scripture created by women. But the Theragata isn't nearly so well known, and it's full of beauties. It's the Buddha's enlightened disciples recalling their experience, particularly the things that made the difference for them when they found their own awakening. So Chittika says, "The call of the crested blue-necked peacocks in the Kauravivya forest, urged on by the cool breeze, awakens the sleeper to meditation." Or Talupata says, "When the sky deva has reigned, sky god, when the sky deva has reigned, when the grass is four fingers high, when the grove is in full flower, I shall lie in the forest like a tree. It will be soft for me, like cotton, but I shall be master." So we have these wonderful evocations of the life that these monks, following the Buddha's example, and following his urging of them to see nature in a different way that wasn't something they had to fear, we have these wonderful evocations of what it was like to discover you could feel at home there and to become part of the natural world's beauty. And this is mixed with the emotion of metta, or loving kindness, which encompasses all life and is an open-hearted response, which is particularly important to practice if you're in the jungle and this life was considering eating you. So, and this is not about attachment to natural beauty, that's made clear in the text, but nonetheless it's powerfully emotional. So what do we draw from this story? It's a story really about someone making a breakthrough for themselves so that the world of nature opens up for himself and for his disciples. And for Gotama, for the Buddha, becoming intimate with his mind enabled him to find the roots of terror which had coloured entirely his relationship with the natural world. That, I think, is something that's very accessible, and it's not something I've ever heard or read about, that the Buddha discovered the natural world and made it accessible to his disciples. That's very clear in East Asian poetry. Much later, Buddhists were very clear about that, but it's lost in the early tradition. And I think there's something about the value of seeing the Buddha as being different from us, of unearthing the society and the culture in which he lived, that shows us things that are actually very meaningful and significant. The value of changing our states of mind and how that creates a whole world view, and the value of facing even the most difficult and dangerous, fearful aspects of our experience. The Bodhisattva that the Mahayana tradition, that later Buddhism, when later Buddhists came to tell the story of the Buddha, they increasingly came to imagine that he'd already been enlightened, in effect, or very nearly enlightened, by the time he was born. So they had to skate over these passages, which are very clear that he was actually capable of feeling intense fear. They just ignored all of that in the Mahayana. So if we don't do that, then the Buddha becomes this much fuller figure. And I don't think that that reduces him to the merely historical, which is another issue. If you're approaching a figure like the Buddha, it probably applies to any religious figure, in historical terms, because you can imagine that that means simply seeing him as another person, the product of his time and place. I think that if we return the Buddha to his time and place, then we can find out the lessons that are relevant now. That life is uncontrollable, and we find wisdom by opening to that. that to heal our relationship with nature, we must first heal ourselves, and that the transformation that occurs is on every level, not just the conscious.